Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, conservatives and liberals, boys and girls, to the number one podcast in the world that Ray and I co-host. The Life of Caesar podcast. My name is Cameron Riley, a.k.a. the most hated man in history podcasting. I thought I'd put the history bit in there. My kids were looking at the Life of Caesar podcast website last night. They should have been doing their homework, but they were looking at that, and they were like, why do you call yourself the most hated man in podcasting? I said, wow, it's a long story. And then they looked at you and started laughing, Ray Harris.
Oh, God.
Because apparently you look like their social studies teacher, Mr. Podgita, who's South African. They just started cracking up. They're like, oh, my God, it's Mr. Podgita.
I was a history teacher at one point in high school, so it's a good chance.
Wow. And then they saw the photo of your daughter wearing the Life of Caesar t-shirt and started laughing because they thought that was one of our listeners. And I said,
No, she's too popular to be listening.
How are you, Ray? How's life in Virginia, the realm?
Absolutely fantastic. I'm excited to be here. I'm thinking about doing what J. David Markham did. I think he started drinking halfway through the series with the Napoleon series, so I might start doing that as well. I'll let you know.
He also I'm not going there. No. Stop it, Cameron. Don't. He might listen to this. Okay.
Yes.
Mm.
Everything's great on this end. Everything is great on this end. And thank you to everyone who's written in and who makes comments and supports me over Cameron on Facebook. You have no idea what it means to me. Yeah. And thank you for all the people who've ordered mugs and T-shirts, and they're on their way out to you. You know who you are.
And we will review some of the reviews, but we're going to do that a little bit later on in the show. We're going to get straight into it. Straight into it.
Absolutely. Break it up a little bit.
Last episode, we spent 20 minutes at the beginning of the show talking about reviews, so we're not going to do that this time.
No.
Where are we up to in the story of Caesar, J, full stop, Ray?
Well, just to sum up, so Caesar and Bibulus are consuls. Bibulus is pretty much going to take the rest of the year off. Caesar has been able to pass the land reform bill for Pompey. He's been able to get through the eastern settlement for Pompey. Shit. And he's been able to reduce what the Publicani have to bring in as far as their tax collections by one third. So Caesar has delivered for his friends, and now he's just got to get through the rest of the year. And we were talking about all the different weddings that went on. So Caesar's now married. His next year should be relatively safe because his father-in-law is probably going to be the consul for next year. So things are looking good. But there's one little thing that's about to go wrong. And Caesar knows this already. Around April, I guess April or May of each year, it starts to get hot in Rome. And Caesar knows everybody's going to take off. They're going to go to their villas. They're going to relax. They're going to enjoy their long weekends and have friends over and do things. So he's got to squeeze as much work as he can in until everybody starts heading out to their villas in the country.
Yeah. Is that you're passing the baton to me there? Is that why you paused or – Did a storm hit?
Baton has – no. No, you are the storm. You are the storm, Cameron.
I am the storm. I bring the thunder, Ray.
I'm going to get a shirt that says that. Anyway.
I was just going to get Caesar delivers. I thought that was good. So before they go into recess, he decides he's going to push through the next phase – of the agrarian law. Now, we talked in the last episode, first thing he did when he became consul is, boom, hits him with the agrarian law. And it's very reasonable. It's very fair. Cato, Cicero don't like it, but you can never make those guys happy. They're a bit like one of my ex-wives. But, it was pretty reasonable. But now he pushes through the next phase. Now, this is dealing with publicly owned land in Campania. Sure, I pronounced that wrong. And which had been exempted from the first law. Now, the commissioners that they appointed the first time around have already started work trying to figure out how to get all of Pompey's returned servicemen, soldiers sorted out in their land. And it may be, we don't really know exactly why Caesar decided to extend the agrarian law. Mm-hmm. May have been that maybe they didn't have enough land for all of the soldiers that they wanted to redistribute. All of the, wasn't just soldiers, it was also men with families. Maybe Caesar always knew that this was going to be the case, that they were going to run out of land. He just decided to, we'll introduce the first phase and pass that because it will seem innocuous and there's nothing in there that people can argue with. And once it's up and running and just before people go on holidays, boom, then we come in with the second part of the law. Pretty canny, cunning, I think I said the right word there, tactic. Don't think we need to put an NSFW thing on this yet.
Nope.
Yeah. So he pushes it through.
I think he did a good job. Yeah, I think if he would have delivered, if he would have offered up both at the same time, he would have met a lot of resistance. And again, it's just that he's been around Rome, you know, ever since he was a kid. He knows how things work. He's been in the Senate for a long time, and he's just wisely doing what he needs to do. But not only that, but he also he's not really the author of it, but there's one more very important bill that's got to go through before everybody goes away on their summer holidays. And this is going to affect Rome. This is going to affect Caesar. This is going to affect everybody and the history of Rome from here on out. And he is able to get he's thinking about the future, and he's able to get a 5-year command for himself after his time as consul is done. So what he does is he gets Vatinius, a tribune of the pleb, to propose this. Caesar is going to be given a 5-year command of Illyricum, which is where, like, right across in the Balkans. If you look at Roman map, Rome on a map, and turn your eyes to the right, you'll see Balkans. That's where Illyricum is at. And he's also going to get Cisalpine Gaul, which is just north of Italy. And he's going to be the governor there for 5 years. He's going to have, what I think, two or three legions, which he can do a lot with. And I'm sure he has nothing to do with this. The governor of Transalpine Gaul is on his way out to his province, and he dies, and Caesar is able to get that as well, and he has another legion. So here's Caesar. He's setting himself up for after his consulship. For 5 years, he's going to be governor of this very large tract of land. He's going to have 4 legions and a very talented general, can do a lot of good or bad with 4 Roman legions.
Indeed. So Caesar is now set up for the next phase. So this was always the play. You know, we've talked about this time and time again. It was always, boom, get the consulship, boom, make sure you get a really good governorship where you can make some bling and start to pay off these debts and solidify his power. Just getting back to the Campania agrarian law, though, I just wanted to make a couple of additional points. One is that there were 20,000 men with families, only married men with families. They had to have 3 or more children to be eligible, that were settled on this land. They were from Rome's poor. So 20,000 families that they said, hey, here's some land. Go and grow some stuff on a farm in Campania. Which is kind of interesting, you know, why they were picking men with families. You know, there's one thought that they thought that they might be more sort of serious, long-term farmers. They're going to actually take it seriously because, you know, they're not, you know, running around sowing their wild oats. They've already got a family, et cetera, et cetera. And again, as with the first law, you remember the first law where when Caesar passed the agrarian law, the senators had to agree to an oath that they would never repeal the law. They had to do it this time as well. So he's locking in these laws, making sure that once his consulship is over, the next guys can't come in and go, "Yeah, we're going to pull an Obamacare on that. We're going to repeal it."
And the other thing that's, I mean, everyone probably has figured this out already, but because this is part of Caesar's plan, he knows there's trouble in the Balkans. He knows there's trouble in Gaul. There's a lot of, you know, tension with the Germanic tribes and whatnot. There is going to be some form of war or battle or conflict in the next 5 years, and he is going to use this to try to outshine Pompey. He's already a great lawyer. He's already a great politician. And now he wants to show the world and Pompey, his son-in-law, that he is a better general than him. So this is part of the plan. He knows there's going to be trouble. And if there, and if there's not, he might have to create some trouble. But he's gonna shine in these 5 years. And that is part of the plan, to be remembered as the greatest Roman there ever was.
Is that the end of the episode? You just put your end of the episode voice on.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me take that back. I don't know how to say it any other way. But yeah, no.
Okay.
That's the end of that.
Wow. No, well, I want to talk about, you mentioned, so Caesar also got Transalpine Gaul because the current governor, Quintus Caecilius Metellus Cella, discussed before, celery was named after him. He loved the celery. He died on the way out there. Now, just to remind us who this guy was, he had been consul in 60 BCE, was the son of Quintus Caecilius Metellus Nepos, and he had previously been a legate, a praetor, propraetor of Cisalpine Gaul in 62 and augur. But we don't really know the circumstances of his death, but the story is that he might have been poisoned by his wife, Clodia Maior Quadrantaria, who was apparently a bit of a lady. She was notoriously debauched, reputed incestuous lover of her brother Clodius, who we're going to be talking about later, but also, and possibly also, the lover of the poet Catullus. Why does my laptop just stopped working? Oh, there we go.
No. She had lots of friends.
Well, the poet Catullus apparently identified her as the subject of his poem Lesbia.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he wrote this big love poem called Lesbia, and that was apparently about her. And I know what you're thinking. But no, it had nothing to do with her being a lesbian.
No, no. In fact, she was the opposite of that.
Yes, she was. She was a real ladies' member. So anyway, she may have poisoned Metellus Cella, allowing deliberately or not Caesar to become or to also get Transalpine Gaul. But as you said, she was also the lover of her brother Clodius, who we will be talking a lot more about as this episode progresses. But yeah, joining the dots with these things in ancient Rome is fascinating. You know, who was sleeping with who and who had motivations to do this and to do that. It's like Dallas. You know, it's crazy. All right. Let's go.
Instead of the cowboy hats, it was the togas. I think it's probably better to say who wasn't sleeping with whom. But anyway, I'm sure Bibulus bitched when he found out that Caesar got a 5-year job after he's going to be consul. But if he couldn't have bitched too much, because Bibulus does not take on a province for the next 10 years after his consulship. He had no intention of going into the hinterland and
the woods and country paths.
Exactly. So that was a bunch of crap. So let's get into the part. I wrote this on Facebook right before I left. Caesar in this episode is going to twist Cicero into a pretzel, and I just love it. So let's jump into that. So early in April, before all the senators go away, there's one more trial. It seems that Cicero's partner, when he was consul, his consular colleague, Caius Antonius. He was the former governor of Macedonia, and of course, like most Roman governors, he raped the land, he bribed, he extorted, or whatever. And he's now being put on trial, and because Cicero was his colleague and his friend, Cicero feels the need to defend him. And Caesar is backing the prosecution and probably Crassus as well, but we're not sure on that. So they go through there. Cicero gives his normal brilliant speeches, but because the man is just so blatantly freaking guilty, Antonius is found
of extortion,
being a really bad governor, abusing the privileges of a governor with bribes and theft. He just really stole a lot of he took a lot of stuff from people. While he was governor, and he used his troops to do a lot of the dirty work.
But he did what everybody did, right? That was the whole point of being governor.
Yes. Yeah, but most of them are able to get off. He does not get off because Caesar is backing the prosecution. And all this, don't get me wrong, all this is a backstory. But because Antonius did such a good job of stealing from Macedonia, even though he's going to go into exile, he's going to live a fabulous life because he's incredibly wealthy because of his crimes. So crime does pay. But the point of this entire story is that during one of Cicero's long and I'm sure brilliant speeches defending his friend who's guilty as hell, Cicero speaks up and he speaks he speaks inappropriately of the first triumvirate, and he says that he actually feels sorry for Rome because of them, because of Caesar and Crassus and Pompey. So even though he loses the case, he thinks nothing of it. Word gets back to Caesar that Cicero was trash talking him, and Caesar, and this is just brilliant. Caesar is such a, in some ways, just such a dispassionate bastard, because back during the whole Bonadea crisis. Clodius, who was the one who committed the sacrilege, he wanted to switch from a patrician to a plebeian because he wanted to be a tribune of the plebs, and that was only for tribunes. So he has to officially be adopted into a family, and you have to ask. And Caesar took that request, and he was holding on to it. Clodius would ask him about it all the time, and Caesar's like, no, not yet. And finally, now that Cicero was talking smack about Caesar, Caesar is going to grant Clodius the right to become a pleb so he can run for the tribune of the plebs just because Cicero made an inappropriate remark about Clodius and the supposedly incestuous relationship he had with a sister. Cicero said that incest is a game the entire family can play. And that just pissed off Clodius to no end. So now Caesar's pissed. Caesar basically releases the hound of that is Clodius onto Cicero. And Cicero is so afraid of what this guy's going to do that he hides in his villa practically all summer. And I just love the way Caesar handled that. He didn't freak out. He didn't stomp and scream. He just said, this is why I was holding this. And now I'm going to make you a pleb. And now you can go after Cicero as a tribune of the pleb, which gives him a lot of power.
But let's remember here that this guy had an affair with Caesar's wife. Caesar divorced his wife because this guy was having an affair with her. And now Caesar basically does him a few favors, uses him as his political tool, gets him a promotion.
Yep.
That's Rome, man.
Yeah, but Caesar's not done with Cicero yet. We don't have to go into it yet, but Caesar is not done with Cicero yet. One minute he's his enemy, next minute he's his friend. I don't know what they did for headaches back then, but I'm sure Cicero during this summer had a massive headache, and it was all Caesar's fault.
By the way, getting back to Gaius Antonius Hybrida, we were talking about before, Macedonia guy, just wanted to point out that he is the uncle of Mark Antony, the famous Mark Antony, who obviously we will encounter more and more as the story goes on, but everyone's heard of Mark Antony.
Right.
But he's just been prosecuted. So Mark Antony, Caesar's best friend, his uncle, Caesar, hauls over the coals, partly to sort of trash Cicero. Because I think, did you point out that, you know, not only did Cicero defend him, but the governorship of Macedonia that he had was supposed to be Cicero's. But Cicero gave it to him sort of as a deal during the whole Catiline conspiracy to keep Antonius on side and blah. It was very complicated. I've got a section here from Dio, Cassius Dio's Roman History. This is about Gaius Antonius's time in Macedonia. The latter while governor of Macedonia had inflicted many injuries upon the subject territory as well as upon that which was in alliance with Rome and had suffered many disasters in return. For after ravaging the possessions of the Dardanians and their neighbours, he did not dare to await their attack, but pretending to retire with his cavalry for some other purpose, took to flight. In this way, the enemy surrounded his infantry and forcibly drove them out of the country, even taking away their plunder from them. When he tried the same tactics on the allies in Moesia, he was defeated near the city of the Istrians by the Bastanian Scythians, bastards. They were all bastards in Bastanian, who came to their aid. And thereupon he ran away.
Run away, run away, run away.
It was not for this conduct, however, that he was accused, but he was indicted for complicity in Catiline's conspiracy. Yet he was convicted on the former charge, so that it was his fate to be found not guilty of the crime for which he was being tried, but to be punished for something of which he was not accused. That was the way he came off. But Cicero, who defended him at this time because Antonius had been his colleague, made a most bitter attack upon Caesar, whom he held responsible for the suit against him, and even went so far as to heap abuse on him. So he was like recalled by Caesar and hauled over the coals, maybe not for what he had done in Macedonia, even though it also says he was detested for his oppressive rule and extortions over the people. But it may have just been payback or an attempt to attack Cicero through a third party.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
I just thought it was great. So Cicero was hiding indoors. He's hiding in his villa. Everybody's gone away. And the best that Cicero can do is hope that everybody gets mad at Caesar for the second land reform bill. Because they're not going to have the money. That Campania is not going to be bringing in the money that it normally had. But Pompey had brought so much money to the treasury that it wasn't going to be an issue. But then, so Caesar has been messing with Cicero behind his back. And then Caesar sends a letter to Cicero, who's hiding in his villa. And he says, hey, my time, half of the year is gone. I'm going on to bigger and better things when this is over. Why don't you come with me, Cicero, and you can be a legate? And we'll go, and I know army stuff is not your thing, but I'll take care of you. I'll protect you, and you can handle all my supplies and things like that. And you can be a legate, and you'll have something to do. When you can't be persecuted when you're in an official position. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank right now. But so Caesar, after messing with Cicero this whole time, still offers up an olive branch to Cicero and says, "Why don't you come with me north for 5 years, and I'll protect you, and you'll get a chance to work on the military side of your reputation." And Cicero turns him down flat, so Caesar doesn't feel too bad about him running from Clodius every time he sees him.
Hmm. Yeah. Cicero, standing his ground.
Yeah, I do admire him for that. He's kind of not the hero of our story, but I do admire that he's sticking to his guns throughout all of this, and it is pretty impressive.
Amnesty, was that the word you were looking for? Political amnesty? No.
What it is when you're in office, I can't believe I'm doing this, but when you're in office, you can't be charged with anything. I cannot believe, I'm sure someone's emailing us right now.
Get on Twitter, people. Tell us.
Life of Caesar.
It's not, anyway, it's not live, but we've submitted.
It's semi-live. So we're halfway through the year. Bibulus is still at home staring up at the skies. He's still writing nasty shit about Caesar and Pompey, and he's still having it posted in the forum. So he's just sitting there. So Caesar's got to do all the work of the executive branch of the government, but which is really no problem for Caesar. He likes to be busy. He likes to stay busy. He's got his hand in everything. So the government still more or less is running smoothly, even though one of the consuls is at home throwing a hissy fit.
All right. Is this a good place to leave it to take a break? Should we take a break?
Yeah, why not? Sure.
Halfway
sure.
through? Yeah, we'll take a break.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to look up what that's called. I'm like you, man. God. Like, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Crazy.
It is
crazy. We have to pause this damn show, look it up, and then jump back on and act like we knew what we were doing the whole time.
We'll do that.
I'm fine with that.
I'll do that. Yes. I'll just edit it in later. I'm not going to make us look dumb.
And
you already have no personality. Like, we can't have you having no personality and
not knowing anything.
Uneducated.
Imperium. Imperium. Hello, it's Imperium.
Oh, you're talking about the Roman word for it. I thought you were talking about the modern word. Sorry.
No, no, the hell with the... Imperium.
All right. Well, we're just going to take a quick break now and talk about who gets a coffee mug. So these were the reviews I saw as of last night on iTunes. So if you're a first-time listener, this is a funny place to start at episode 11, but... You know, do it your way.
Well, it's got a one in it. It does have a one.
Yeah, two ones. It's doubly the best place to start. But what we've been doing is, you know, if you go up on iTunes or Facebook or Twitter and you say something nice about us, you give the show a plug, you write a nice review, you go in the running for a photo of Ray sunbathing. Mm-hmm. Sure.
With a coffee mug.
With a coffee mug. So the coffee mug is strategically placed.
as Ray has handles, people.
You can also purchase a coffee mug by emailing.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
By emailing Ray at nakedphotosofray.com.
lifeofcaesarpodcast@gmail.com.
Right. So just want to read a couple of the reviews that I really enjoyed. Big Bad Bren from Australia, 2 mugs, 5 stars. Having just listened to episode 10, which included 20 minutes discussing reviews, I thought I would keep my brief in deference to the other listeners. See the title, which is 2 mugs, 5 stars. Thank you, Big Bad Bren. Paul Asula from the first and only coach Jeff from Australia. Ray and Cameron are the ultimate toga party. As a big consumer of podcasts and a producer of more than 8 of my own podcasts, I can honestly say that I am enjoying getting a history lesson whilst having a few laughs along the way. Please do not change a single... That almost sounded auto-tuned. Please do not change a single thing, as I love it just the way it is. That's what I've heard about you, Jeff. You love it just the way it is. Keep up the great work, boys. Coach Jeff from Brisbane. He's a hometown boy. Hey, Jeff, don't just post – if you're in Brisbane, ring me up. Take me out for a scotch, man. Seriously, dude. And I want to know more about these 8 of your podcasts. Like, that's hardcore, really, man. We're flat out producing 1. You produce 8. Ray produces 2. I've got a couple others here. Bernard Muckenfub from Germany says, Ich habe selten schon bei einem gesicht Podcast schon gelacht. Ein Australier und ein Amerikaner unterhalten sich über Caesar. Das muss man gehört haben.
Is that German with an Australian accent?
That was just butchered German. My wife, Chrissy, speaks German, and I said to her, can you translate that for me? But I got tired of waiting, and I went to Google Translate, which butchered it even worse. But basically, he said he really likes it. So thank you, Bernard.
Yay, thank you.
Alex VBG1 from Australia. I came, I saw, can I go now? Yes, you can, Alex. That's the answer to that question. Andrew Mentz from the United Kingdom. A slightly bemused colonial and a loon convict bring a joyous slant to a well-worn subject. Nobody mangles Latin like Ray, although Cameron gives it a good shot. Go on, listen, you'll be hooked. Wow, so you actually got... a tiny piece of criticism. It's normally just me, right?
Tiny piece. It's a splinter. Yeah.
And most of these reviews are from Australia, which just shows you that you're not keeping up the end of your marketing, the marketing game, Ray. But this is definitely my favorite review. It's from C8MD. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce that. I think his name is Dan, because I saw he said something on Facebook too. But the title of Dan's review is Stop Stroking Steve Murray's Ego. Just listen to episode 10. Bravo. Great podcast, boys. Forget the stuffy reviews and those easily offended. They'll always find something to whine about. The irrelevant tangents helps to keep it entertaining. It's like Russian roulette. Who knows where this could lead? It might be Big Julie one moment. Could be a review on last night's Parmigiana the next. I prefer to be surprised. The more minutia, the better, even if it does stray off topic occasionally. One small note, though, and I believe I speak on this topic with some expertise. Stop feeding the ego of a certain Stephen Murray. For people who don't remember who Stephen Murray was, we played a recording of Steve at the beginning of episode 10 where he was explaining how to pronounce these Latin words correctly, which we've been ignoring. Completely ignored.
but we appreciate it.
Yeah, we put it in there because if you want to say them, you know now how to say them properly. But like we have time to...
It'd slow us down.
Yeah, it would, yeah. Anyway, he goes on. I've been married to his sister for over 10 years.
Oh, this is personal.
This is sounding like ancient Rome, man. He's married to... I'm sure it was a political marriage as well. Stephen must be the next consul of wherever they live. And Dan is making sure that, you know, the reforms that he pushes through and his governorship are going to be secure. He's been married to his sister for over 10 years, and I tell you, nothing good will come of it. I assume he means stroking Steve's ego there and not being married to Stephen's sister.
Yeah.
If there is more than one Marius in Caesar, there may be a couple of Caesar in Muzza.
Wow. Now,
for non-Australians who don't understand how you get Muzza out of Murray.
I'm one.
Yeah, so in Australia, we have this fondness for just cutifying names. So Barry is Bazza. And Murray becomes Muzza. We just like to cutify things and put a vowel on the end of it. So it's a bit hard to drag out Murray. Murray.
Right.
You could do it like that. Yeah. We love dragging things out of it, but you're Muzza. So it's
I like that.
It's an Aussie thing.
I like that.
Drove my American wife nuts for the first few years she was here. Anyway, keeps going. Give him too much airtime and reap the ego you sow. Beware the Ides of May or June or July or whenever. Otherwise, I'm loving it. It's been a few years, give or take, since I studied Caesar, and you guys are killing it. I think he means that in a positive sense.
Yeah,
I'm finding all these well-known events fascinating, as if I hadn't already studied them. I'm hearing them anew because of the color you're giving these characters and events. So well done. By the way, I've never been a fan of podcasts. It's always boring or too highbrow, but you guys have made me a believer. No, that's believer. So anyway, and then he says, sorry, Steve, just kidding. Sends out his love to
Big nice. Steve.
It does, yeah, yeah. Just he's repairing the familial damage that he had done previously. Anyway, so there are the key reviews for this week. Who do you think deserves a Caesar coffee mug, Ray?
Well, I like the last one because then he can take it and shove it in Steve's face. The mug, I mean.
All right, so
that's my
Dan. I think it's Dan C8MD. Dan. Shoot Ray an email with your address and details at whatever the address is.
Yeah, and, lifeofcaesarpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, and we'll get you a coffee mug. But you got to take a photo of it and post that shit up on Facebook, man.
Yes, actually, if you could shove it in his face and then take the photo, I would really appreciate that.
Yes. And actually, we did. We had some great photos, or a great photo. Let me see.
Did you see the one where he says he tells his kids not to touch it?
No.
I'll send that to you. It's the best one. In fact, we should definitely put it on the website. It's like four different photos. How my kids see it, wife sees it.
I just saw that one. Yeah.
That was hands down awesome.
Yeah.
I'll put that on the website.
I think Mark Shepherd who posted another great photo?
Mark did, yep. Yeah. He recently got his, yep.
Yeah, and Dan Droll, I think, is C8MD by the looks of it because he's posted the same review up on the thing.
Got it.
Yeah, the Facebook. Great photo. Mr. Shepard, I like it. And it looks like he works for Reebok. Judging by the logo on his shirt, a photo taken in an office by the looks of it, or he just has the most boring house ever. So, you know, if you do work for Reebok, Mark.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of those shoes that are made by 8-year-old slaves in
China. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, like. Flick a couple to, you know, help a brother out, man. Like,
What's the Aussie version of a hook a brother up? Yeah, so.
Yeah, there's no Aussie version of that.
Okay.
Yes, James Bunch did the How My Kids See My Mug, What My Girlfriend Sees, How I See My Mug, and How My Caesar Mug Really Looks.
Yes.
It's not a cigar beside that, though. It's a pen, unfortunately.
Well, he's doing the best he can.
Not everybody can sport the cigar. Nope. All right. Well, that's the reviews for this week. If you have sent a review and we missed it, I apologize. I did look at the Twitter and the iTunes, though. Sorry, the Facebook, I think. So anyway, let's move on. So where are we up to now?
Yeah.
Cicero.
Well, now we're going to get to the – Now the second half of the show is going to get dark. It's going to be about conspiracies and murder and mystery and freaking JFK assassination all over just 2,000 years earlier. So anyway, so all the stuff that Caesar's doing, the high-handed tactics, you know, when he throws Cato in jail. This is starting to get some negative reaction. There are people who are starting to react to this. Caesar is still getting his way, don't get me wrong, but it's starting to rub some people the wrong way. The commoners love Caesar. He's always been about, he's always had a good relationship with the common man, but there are those who are starting to fight back and actually say something publicly. So I think kind of out of nowhere, there's a young man named Caius Scribonius Curio, who's the son of a consul. His father was consul in 76 BCE, and he starts to, in the forum, speak of dissent against the triumvirate, against Caesar, and it's actually gaining some ground. It's gaining some traction. So the triumvirate has to be careful, and Caesar seems to be sensitive to anything negative coming because he's still got the second half of his year to go. And so he's just very sensitive to this and he's doing the best he can. And then, Cameron, I'll let you jump in on this, but then Vettius, a man who, accused Caesar of being with Catiline and got the crap kicked out of him and whisked away. He's back in the scene now and he's got some more accusations about everybody, about Curio, the man who's now on the scene. He's got accusations about Caesar and Bibulus and Pompey, and it's just going to turn the whole Senate into a, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's just a bunch of plots and rumors and whispers and conspiracies are going to go around the Senate for the second half of Caesar's consulship.
Yeah, exactly. So Vettius, we did talk about him before. He was accused of the conspiracy, being complicit in the Catiline conspiracy, and he was beaten up. He was thrown in prison. Now he comes back. He's back. you know, not many people know this, but he did originate the phrase, I'll be back, and that Schwarzenegger, you know, just stole.
Absolutely stole it straight
from Vettius. Yep. He comes back and he goes, I got another one. I got another plot.
And he keeps changing his story. He keeps changing. It's just like no one can believe this guy.
Yeah, yeah. How this guy managed to get an audience again, I don't know. But anyway, obviously somebody was playing him, I suspect. But anyway, he says, look, I'm friends with Curio. And this is hard to follow. I had to read this like four or five times to try and get my head around
it.
He says, yeah, I'm friends with Curio. And Curio told me that he plans to murder Pompey. Maybe Pompey and Caesar. Not quite sure.
Two for one.
Now Curio tells his father, and then the Senate summons Vettius in. Now he says, well, Bibulus is telling Curio that he has to murder Pompey and Caesar, maybe. And there are other conspirators, including Servilia's son, Brutus. Now, Servilia, of course, sister, half-sister to Cato. What's her relationship with Cato exactly? Can you remember?
Yeah, it's like half.
Half-sister, maybe.
Yeah.
But lover, lifetime lover of Julie, Big Julie.
Yep.
the big J.
The big J.
So they're getting all these versions of the story, but there's something here about a plot to kill Pompey and maybe Caesar.
Right. And not only that, but his story, even though he keeps changing it, it gets to the point where it's truly not believable when he brings in Brutus, because everyone who knows Brutus at that time, or they've seen him in the streets of Rome, he's this sickly, pale youth. All he does is read books, and he's more of an intellectual. He's certainly not a soldier. And they're going, wait a minute, there's a conspiracy to kill some of the most powerful men in Rome, and he's in on it? Oh, I don't think so. So his whatever credibility Vettius has, it's quickly falling apart as he adds names and the list of victims to his story.
Sorry, I'm just making a note.
That's fine.
Apparently I've got a meeting that I forgot about.
Oh, all right.
That's not for a while, but...
Okay, good.
Somebody just sent me a message saying, don't forget our meeting. And I was like, shit, I did forget our meeting.
I did forget our meeting, that's right.
Yeah. All right. So.
Yep.
I wasn't listening. What'd you get?
Oh, my God. I was freaking brilliant. So now it's time to bring everybody in front of the Senate. So the Senate calls Curio and Vettius to the Senate. Curio, and this doesn't really have to mean a lot, but he's very poised and he handles the questions that the senators fired him, and he handles it with dignity and aplomb. And so the Senate believes him just because he speaks well. And then Vettius gets back up there and he kind of trashes his own story. So they throw Vettius in jail and they're going to put him on trial. They don't know exactly what, but they're going to put him on trial. But they find him, I don't know if it's days later or weeks later or whatever, but they find him dead in jail. Yeah. So this man who was doing all this talking is now dead. Supposedly he had strangle marks around his neck, but they were calling it a suicide. So again, just a very convoluted, screwed up, he choked himself.
People strangle themselves every day, right?
I'm just a conspiracy nut. I'm sorry.
I know. You're crazy. Yeah, So just to sum all that up, folks, Curio is making an attack on the triumvirs. Then Vettius comes along and says that Curio plans to assassinate, told him that he plans to assassinate Pompey and Caesar. Vettius, is not a very credible witness, but nevertheless seems to get an audience. When he gets questioned, his story starts to fall apart, and then he gets found dead. But he's going to go on trial, kind of like, tell us who put you up to this, Cicero, thinking that Caesar that's putting up this to discredit Curio. But before he can talk, in classic mafia style, he's found dead before he can.
He's whacked.
Before he can be. Yeah. He whacks himself.
he's a self-waxer.
Which anyway, you should not do. It'll make you go blind. That's where that story comes from. Not only he'll kill you. Self-whacking.
Blind with death. That's why I stopped. Anyway, so years ago.
Some people would say this podcast is one long example of self-whacking on both of our parts.
I can't refute that. So to sum all up, something is rotten in the state of Rome, if I can borrow from Shakespeare. So, but politics goes on, the year goes on, you can't stop it, even though they got all this drama. Now, Bibulus was supposed to start up the process for the re-election for next year. Even though it's only July, they like to get everything going because they want to have it all. They want to have the election done, all taken care of, so there's a smooth transition. But because he's sitting at home staring up at the stars, probably doing his own waxing, I don't know, he basically Caesar has to do it. Caesar's like, oh, crap, okay, so let me add this on. So what should have happened in July as far as the consular elections for next year don't happen until October. And good news for Caesar, his brand new father-in-law, Calpurnius Piso, is going to be the senior consul for next year. So things are looking really good for Caesar. But of course, you can't end on a positive note because there's so much drama about what Rome's going on. So there are people that accuse Caesar near the end of the year, and he's got to deal with that. Do you want to touch on the completely ironic but beautifully so, what happens to Clodius and Bibulus? I know you like things like that. Or should I do it?
You do it. Because I don't know. Okay. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. So Clodius becomes a pleb. He is elected tribune of the pleb. And at the end of the year, Bibulus is about to give his outgoing speech. And you he's going to tear into Caesar. He is going to tear into Caesar. He's going to talk. He wants everything that Caesar did for the entire year invalidated. It was wrong. The auspices were wrong. And before he can even say three words, probably, Clodius, who is now a tribune of the pleb, says, "I veto your speech," just like they did to Cicero. So Bibulus has to shut up and walk away, and he doesn't have the last word against Caesar. Speaking of last word, I'm going to let you do this, Cameron, but Caesar has a little crowing to do at the end of his year as consul. And he says something that at first I found confusing, and then it was kind of ominous because it sounded a little bit like something Sulla would say. I don't know if you want to touch on that.
Yeah, well, you know, when you first asked me about this, I gave you my initial interpretation, and then I reread it a few times, and I researched it, and I still am not quite sure what's going on here. So Caesar's got one foot out of the door of the consulship. He's going to go to Gaul. He's going to make bank. But before – and he's feeling pretty pleased with himself, as you would imagine. So he stands up in the Senate. It's like the last day. His bags are packed. he's jumping on the stagecoach. He's heading out of town, and he says that he had gained his greatest desire to the great grief of his enemies, and he would now mount on their heads. Now, when I first read that, I thought it said mount their heads. He would mount their heads. Right. And I thought it meant like he would put their heads on spikes. But it actually translates as mount on their heads. Now, I think this is kind of a sexual double entendre. Like he's talking about, you know, climbing up and sticking his, you know,
manhood.
Gallium. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a Latin term for.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's going to.
Alice.
Like, he's going to. There might be kids listening to this, so I'm being a little bit delicate. Yeah, right, but, you know, he's going to do it.
Can I take a stab at it?
Sure.
He's going to do to their heads what he's probably been doing to their wives.
Oh, nice one. Yeah, nice. So. Yeah,
but he. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, so one senator, we don't know who, apparently said, responded by saying, well, that's going to be pretty hard for a woman to do. Getting back to that old story about Caesar being the gay lover of Nicomedes.
Right.
But Caesar retorts quickly, Semiramis had been queen of Syria and the Amazons in days of old, had held sway over the great part of Asia. So there you go. So he's basically saying women can be powerful, but how that is a retort to, I'm going to do to your face what I've been doing to your wives, and you go, well, you're gay, and you go, well, women are powerful. I don't know. It doesn't make sense very much. But anyway, basically, the bottom line is, I think here, Caesar's parting words as he leaves the Senate are like, he just gives them the middle finger.
Yeah, and says, exactly right.
Yeah, I got everything I wanted and you hated it and you can just suck on it, basically.
That's right.
Which
suck on a lemon, kids. But,
I got to say, right, like, I was kind of surprised at this because – you know, we've seen, you know, lots of points in this process where Caesar has been, he's very politically adroit. He's been very careful all throughout his career to try and be, you know, popular, to, you know.
Very calculated.
Yeah, the agrarian law, at least initially, was very delicately handled. When he first became consul, let's remember that he passed a new law saying, you know, when it's my month off. Of course, he didn't end up having any months off because Bibulus ran and cried in his bedroom for the rest of the year. But he said, you know, I'll have my lictors walk behind me. You know, he seemed to be making concessions and be very sort of careful not to upset anyone. Do you think this is a sign that now that he's got what he wanted, he just doesn't care anymore. It's like, ha, I've been pretending to be nice all along. Or did his ego just get completely out of control over the course of this year, like, you know, yours has over the run of this podcast?
Ouch. Yeah, no, I think it was his ego. I think he's doing everything he can to keep it in, but he's at the tail end. He's just got to crow like Peter Pan. He's just got to let it, even though it only comes out for like 20 seconds, he's got to show just some utter happiness about kicking ass for the last year, and the last 40 years of his life have paid off, and he got everything he needed as a console, and he's just gotta let it out just for a second. He's gotta let it out. I think it was all ego.
And according to Cicero, I don't know if you saw this, but when Caesar jumped on the Greyhound coach that was leaving Rome, he apparently dropped his toga and stuck his butt on the back window of the bus and just kind of slapped it a little bit.
Who hasn't done that? I mean, I did that last week, but anyway.
He kind of slapped it and pointed a little bit. And
it's a codex when you point at your butt. So anyway, but you will have to remember, because of the accusations that a couple of people tried near the like the last week or the last day that he's in office, he kind of hangs around Rome until about March of 58 BCE, because the longer that his laws are on the books and no one's messing with him, he's got a better chance of them not being messed with later when he leaves. So he just kind of watches things for a couple of months. I'm sure he ties up loose ends at home. He might even said hi to his wife. I don't know. He certainly said hi to Servilia. And then he takes off north in March of 58 BCE.
Is that your concluding voice?
That's my concluding voice, but you conclude all you want, my friend.
No, I'm done.
Okay. But you still got the last word. I'm going to get the last word. Word.
No, you're not.
You can cut it now. I give up. I give whatever. I give up.